I would also like to mention that on today's agenda, tonight's agenda, there's $23 million worth of projects that are being awarded. That's fantastic. We used to pride ourselves if we did $20 million worth of construction in a year. And now we're awarding $23 million on one agenda.
Yeah, the county is doing all kinds of things. Received tens of millions of dollars in various grants over the last couple of weeks. Approved $23 million in spending projects on Tuesday night's Escambia County Commission meeting. That, of course, is the voice of our county administrator, Wes Moreno, who joins us by phone now. Wes, welcome back to the Pensacola Morning News, sir.
Hey, good morning, Andrew. How you doing?
Oh, man, I am doing really well. A lot of money being spent, a lot of drainage projects that you're spending money on, and we know that's expensive stuff, and that's what a lot of people showed up to complain about. But, I mean, that's important things, especially with we saw this big storm that happened in the last week, in addition to all the other storms that we have had, right?
That's exactly right. Yeah, we're going to be investing more in drainage and more, and we know it's a hot topic. I mean, you know, I've been at this a long time, and we have spent millions of dollars in drainage infrastructure throughout the years. But, you know, it's an issue. Every time you get 15 inches of rain in a short amount of time, there's going to be areas of Escambia County that absolutely have a challenge when it comes to drainage. And so we're going to keep chasing it. We're going to keep going after it and keep doing it and keep working it. And keep building. That's what we're going to do.
Yeah, you got the Resilient Florida grant program, put in almost $16 million, $5 million for the Pensacola Bay Living Shoreline and NAS Pensacola and Sherman Inlet. Bayou Grand Villas drainage, $2.5 million. Greater Wedgewood, almost $4 million. Muldoon Velma Softley Field drainage, $2.5 million. The Gulf Beach Highway drainage outfall, $500,000. And then Bridal Trail Estates drainage, almost $2 million. You know, in my neck of the woods, the Oakwood Acres, Palo Fox, Monroe, Brickyard, all of that. Massive project, $26 million from the state. That's a huge number. And then the other half of that grant for the Rebuild Florida Infrastructure Repair was $26 million and a half for the ECAT new transit center. Now, I'm going to pause on that one and ask you this question, because when I saw that, I thought, $26 million granted, it's state money, which is sort of our money indirectly. It's not our, you know, local budget money, which is good, but that seems like an enormous price tag for ECAT. Help me understand why this is a good spend, even though it's not our money, why it's a good spend for this money.
Well, there's several reasons. One, the building, the facility that ECAT, where it exists today, is in a flood zone. When we had that heavy rain, it flooded there as well. And it floods the back half of the sheriff's department. And so we want to get it out of that flood zone. We want to build a new facility, a leaner, meaner facility, if you will, and we're going to transform ECAT into a much more efficient operation. I met with Rodriguez earlier in the week, and we were talking about microtransit, where you bring in these vehicles that maybe haul 10 people, maybe they're 10 people.
Like the shuttle van kind of size?
Yeah, that's right. And you disperse them in certain areas. We're going to create zones. We're going to start with Inslee. We're going to create a zone in Inslee, and we're going to implement that strategy there and see how it works. We think we're going to be very successful, and that will allow us to pull some of these big buses off the road, and some of these, especially the older ones that are kind of at the end of life anyway, but they're high in emissions, they're high in maintenance, they're high in fuel. And so we have a strategy. We do have the strategy there at ECAT. And so that's the reason for building the ECAT. We get it out of the flood zone. We can demo that building, peel up all the asphalt, and make it an area, a green space, if you will, that will help alleviate some of the flooding in that particular area.
Wow. Okay. So the current facility off Fairfield is going to be green space, which makes sense given, I mean, all the flooding issues in that area. I understand. I mean, going as far back, obviously, as the 2014 flood, and we lost the central booking and detention because of water. And that, I mean, that whole area is a mess, as you well know. Where is the new facility going to go?
We're looking around Midtown Commerce Park, there off Palo Fox. Not too far, just down the road a piece.
That's the US 29, the old the Superfund site. In case people don't know that name for it, that's what we're calling it now, the Midtown Commerce site. Okay, and then you mentioned taking big buses off the road. That makes me happy, because I perceive those as not always, but often being a very inefficient form of transportation. Do you have any sense yet of like how much of the fleet is going to be retired, how much of it's going to be downsized, and also we've talked off and on about the ridership study and trying to figure out how to really make it efficient. Is that done or is that still ongoing?
It is done. That's what we were going through earlier in the week.
Okay.
Me and Rod and Leslie Hall, that's what we were going through. We were going through that study earlier in the week. It is done. And with the first zone that we create, and we, you know, it's going to, if I buy these vehicles, if I purchase these vehicles today, I might not get them for years. So,
yeah, right.
You know, it's going to take a bit of a time. So, but we think we can pull, you know, 5 to maybe 6 of those big buses off the street to begin with, and then, you know, progress from there.
That's, well, good. Out of a fleet of how many for ECAT?
They have about 30 buses right now.
Okay, so we're talking about retiring, you know, 20% of the big buses and finding other solutions. Okay, well, I mean, that's a step in the right direction. All right, I mean, that's exciting to me. And just by the way, in case you didn't catch all the news on this, the Rebuild Florida Voluntary Home Buyout Program, $3 million. The Hometown Revitalization Program, $5 million. The Florida Housing Repair and Replacement Program, $9 million. So we got, I mean, there's a lot of money coming into Escambia County over the last couple of weeks, which really, and I just want to give you 30 seconds to praise them, Wes. This is really a testament to the staff you've got working for you, the grant writers, and their willingness to go after these bucks and get them, right?
It is. The staff's done a fantastic job. It was a very short timeline when this grant started rolling out. And Elizabeth Kissel, I can't say enough good about her. She's driving the timeline. She's driving the deadline. She's driving the reports. I mean, she's reminding everybody, hey, you got this due here, this due there. She's just fantastic. And then, of course, you have the staff. You have, you know, Chips and Tim Day and Ryan Kirby and Natural Resources, Tim Evans and Garrett Griffin there with Claire Long and CRA. You have Jordan Lackman and Rob McCracken and Chris Phillips there in engineering. And you have, of course, you have Rodriguez there at ECAT and his team. Everybody came together. Everybody played their role. And we got it. You know, we it's a strategy. We worked the strategy as best we could. Commissioner Bender went to Tallahassee more than once. We had Liz is on a first name basis with the folks at DEO.
That's
they
good.
They see her number come up and they know that they know they better answer. So it was just a great strategy and a great effort by the staff. And I appreciate all of them so much.
Well, that's good news, and we certainly appreciate what they do. I wanted to ask you a question that I didn't even realize kind of how, and I'm going to say it this way, how bad this was, but, you know, it had become well known that we didn't have a committee of the whole meeting. You know, the one for July got canceled. Then I started looking at the ones that had gotten canceled previously, when they would kind of get together and just hash out things and, you know, talk freely while they can do it in the sunshine. We didn't have a committee of the whole meeting in January, and I started looking back at the meeting list, and we didn't have one in May. And we canceled one in April, and we canceled one in March, and we canceled one in February, and we canceled one in January. We canceled December, November, October. The last time we had a committee of the whole meeting was September 8th of last year. This is bad. I mean, we need these meetings so that they can have conversations in direct government outside of the regular agenda and the meetings, right?
I don't know, Andrew. I think we've been doing pretty good, honestly.
I see.
I mean, you know, there's a discussion. I have a discussion agenda. R3 is my discussion. And I can put anything on that discussion that they need to talk about. So, I don't see it as them not discussing certain issues or certain topics. I can put it on a discussion like they did the other night. I had a restore discussion. And that gives them the opportunity. And they can, we can still address the issues. We can still talk about the issues, and do it right there in a public meeting in the sunshine. So, I don't know that we're, in my opinion anyway, I don't know that we're losing anything. If there's a certain topic that may take quite some time, okay, yeah, we'll have a committee of the whole. But if it's something that can be handled on my discussion agenda, I'll do that.
Well,
I think that's more efficient.
Yeah, let me just push back for a second. And obviously, you're going to disagree, and that's fine. But I remember watching the cows, and you would always have more stuff to be haggled about than you had time to do it all the time. And these were, a couple hours long meetings, and you always had, like, we can get to 1 and 2 and 3, but we can't get to 4 and 5. So next time we do 4 and 5, and then we got a new 1 and 2. And what I remember is that these meetings were very robust, very interesting, very thoughtful and in-depth. It's hard to believe that the full business of the county has suddenly become so simple and streamlined that we can do it without all of that conversation. That's my perception as a citizen. Convince me I'm wrong.
Well, I don't know what to tell you. I think we're doing very well. I mean, we're handling business. We're doing business. Things are going as well as they could possibly go. I don't know. I mean, there are some issues hanging out there, but they're being worked. And, you know, if I thought we needed a committee of the whole, we would have one. If I thought we had an issue that was going to take 2 hours to go through, we would have one. But I don't see those issues at the moment. And the discussion agenda is can be very robust or it can be very minimal. But if there's stuff that needs to happen, we can talk about it there in discussion.
All right.
At a regular board meeting. I mean, I don't know. I guess I see us being more efficient with our time. I don't need directors sitting in the boardroom, just sitting there. I need directors out working. I need staff out working. I don't need them sitting in the boardroom. And that's kind of been our approach.
All right. I hear you. I mean, I'm always listening to the people who disagree, and I certainly respect that things have in many ways been going well. So I'll take it as a response. Last thing, and we just don't have a lot of time to deal with this, but I just wanted to ask you, what's the scope of the reconsideration of the Perdido roundabout? Are we talking about, because Commissioner Bergosh brought this up the other day, are we looking at whether it should be widened to two lanes? Are we looking at whether it should be abandoned for some other thing? What is the scope of the assessment going to be?
We'll see. I know Chris Phillips, you know, he came up the other night. I know Chris has spent some time out there, and he'll put the scope of the study together. I don't know if it's going to be demoing the roundabout and putting in a signal, or if it's going to be adjusting the current roundabout and putting two lanes in. I'm not sure what the end results are going to be or what they're going to look at, but I'm sure they will probably look at more than one solution.
Okay.
And then we'll take that into consideration.
Okay. And I have to assume that if it is signalization as the end solution, that part of that would be interconnected with the ATMS when that all gets up and running. And I mean, you know, I'm assuming all of that in advance. I just thought it was a sudden announcement that we were going to, they at least consider completely undoing that choice, which, hey, if it's not working, it's not working. I get that. I just was curious how broad the scope of this was, and you kind of answered that. Also, we have a new emergency coordinator, so we've hired another staff, so I always appreciate that. And cut positions, your budget. It's kind of interesting to hear the discussion about the positions that have been eliminated because they didn't need to be filled. Wes Moreno, the Escambia County Administrator. As always, Wes, thank you for the time. Thanks for answering our questions. And I will give you credit. Things do run really well, so maybe you've got the right of this and the argument about whether the cows are even needed, sir. I appreciate it.
All right. Thank you, Andrew. Have a good day.